Well, I'm back in the States, and we're talking about a very familiar topic on the podcast this week, and that is documents and how to get those documents on your website. What kind of documents should you be thinking about and sharing with your website visitors? Lots of good community feedback and some interesting picks this week. Stay tuned. This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network, sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Hello, everybody. This is Martin Spriggs with the Wells Tech podcast for August 20th, 2013. This is episode 303, show where we talk about ministry, technology, and where those two meet. We're happy that you joined us. I say we because I don't do this alone. I am with my constant companion, Sally Draper. Hi, Sally.
Hi, Martin. Happy to see you this week and happy that you survived the typhoon. You left us kind of with a cliffhanger last week on Wells Tech. We need to hear the story.
Actually, there wasn't much of a story. I was very underwhelmed by the Hong Kong typhoon.
Well, that's good.
It actually, they called it not a category 8, but a type 8, which means that nobody goes to work until they take that designation off. So I went into the office and you know, it wasn't even raining when I went in. So apparently those can be pretty bad there. So they prefer to be very cautious. And I guess over the Philippines, it was pretty bad. And then over mainland China, it was bad too. But when it came over Hong Kong, it was just a sputter. Utor, I think, was the name of this particular typhoon. So maybe the next time I'm out there, I can see a real typhoon. I don't know.
I wouldn't be wishing for that. I'm glad that you dodged it.
Especially when you're on the 30th floor of the hotel. So, and the office is on like the 17th floor. And the office, the buildings out there are not like what you'd maybe see in Chicago or Milwaukee, New York, something like that. They're very skinny and very tall. So they go up, you know, 60, 70 stories sometimes. And they're, you know, I would say they're probably 300, 400 square feet, you know, per floor. So they're not big. So they look a little precarious, but apparently they hold up pretty well.
Well, very good. Well, thanks for sharing some of that world travel stuff with us. We are moving into, I think, chapter 9, perhaps, of our ebook that we've been doing this summer.
Yep.
And today we're going to talk about documents and putting documents on your website.
Documents are one of those things that are kind of, I mean, everybody's familiar with, you know, getting documents on websites, but now with the content management systems of today, you have to think a little bit more thoroughly through whether you actually need a document or not, because websites and the, you know, the editors that come with them can support all kinds of content and media and images and formatting and those kinds of things. So you have to really decide, you know, do I need a document or can I get away with a, you know, getaway is probably not the best term, but can I use a web page instead? And, you know, sometimes it's a formatting issue if you want it to appear exactly the way you want it, maybe in a document, or if there's a physical distribution of that same document, then there may be occasions where you're going to want to put documents on your website.
Yeah, and you say a formatting issue or whatever. It might also be that it's perhaps easier to do a document than actually go to the trouble of doing a web page.
Could be.
But I would say don't make that the determining factor. You know, just because it's easy for you doesn't mean that it's easy for your website visitor. And I think everyone can relate to the fact that you'd probably rather read the information on a web page if you can than actually have to click again and wait for something to download and launch in another piece of software and that kind of thing. So I would say, you know, err on the side of doing web pages if at all possible. But I think you bring out some really good reasons, Martin, for posting documents on your website. Another thing from personal experience that's been a benefit to me is that the documents are then archived for you. So 5 years from now or 3 years from now when you're thinking, what exactly do those church bylaws say on this topic or whatever it is? You don't have to go dig through a file cabinet. You can, you know, just be real thankful that you've posted the document on your website.
Right. So when you're thinking about documents, we always want to think about what format that document's going to be in. And usually it's one of two formats. I would say the preferred format for documents online should be something that's portable and readable by as many people as possible. And that is usually Adobe's PDF format. It's been around a long time, will probably be around for a long time in the future. It is available, readers are available free of charge. In fact, many web clients will read them or display them right within the browser. So if chances are good that if you have a PDF that up there, people are going to be able to read it. The other one would be its native file format, like Microsoft Word or Excel or PowerPoint, something like that. And those you can use, but obviously the site visitor needs to have those installed on their computer if they're going to want to be able to download and view those.
Right. One thing I'd like to say, just a tiny bit of techie stuff, is the creation of PDFs is not that hard, and there's free software out there. I think we've talked about it in the past on the technical side that will allow you to create PDF documents. So you don't have to be concerned that you have to buy PDF Professional, which is a spendy piece of software to create PDFs. You can create or turn anything that you're working with into a PDF for free. So
the Microsoft products have it built right in now. So it's just in part of their save as function or share function.
So does OpenOffice, which is free word processing software and Office Suite. So, yeah, so there's lots of ways to create PDFs, and that shouldn't hinder you from doing it. I'd say unless you want the person on the other end to be able to edit the document, you want to put it out there in a PDF format, which kind of locks in the formatting and design, and people can't make changes to it. It's more professional, I think.
Yep. So documents can be a way to share, you know, many things that perhaps need to be archived over time, as you mentioned, and maybe review previous versions later. So let's maybe go through a quick list, Sally, of possible documents as you're thinking about what documents you might put on your church or school website, what those categories might be. Obviously, one of the bigger ones for a church would be worship folders. This can also serve in that archive fashion. Now you have a record of your service, and it also allows the visitor to follow along if they're tuning in, especially if you've got live streaming or you're posting, you know, audio or video of your services.
Right. And to go along with that, typically congregations have bulletin type announcements that they publish each week, and obviously monthly kind of newsletters as well.
Yeah, so I think those are big, Sally, newsletters especially. Yeah. Because they usually have some formatting to them, and it's usually easier to take up, you know, that Word file, that publisher file or InDesign file, and convert that to PDF and still maintain the nice look and feel. And most congregations are not totally out of the print business, especially with newsletters that they need to hand out to either school parents or congregation members.
Right. That's a big event in our church, is to get that monthly newsletter. So I think that's a real important one. You also have a lot of schedules to coordinate when you're in the church business. There's, you know, things like altar flowers and ushers and organist, and perhaps in the school side of things, you know, concession stand help or parent volunteers that come in and read to the classroom or something like that. All those different kinds of schedules are perfect for posting on your website and, you know, giving your members the ability to look that information up if they lose the piece of paper they may have.
Yep. So. One of the big ones, Sally, next akin to newsletters, is the calendar. All kinds of calendars that go on your website. And sometimes people just prefer to print those out and stick them on their fridge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, that is nice to offer that PDF kind of alternative to the calendar, because sometimes they don't print so well from the web page.
Right. So.
Yeah, being able to print a single page nicely formatted calendar is appreciated, I'm sure, by many. I mentioned earlier that you might want to search for your church bylaws, but certainly constitution and bylaws are good examples of just kind of those fundamental documents that you want to make sure you have archived and accessible.
Mm-hmm. On the school side, all kinds of things, school supply lists, assignments, you know, the school handbook, classroom rules, policies. You know, there's lots of things, lots of documents that are created that are some are actually required that, you know, they be signed or whatever. And it's important that obviously you put those on the website.
Mm-hmm. School registration reminds me, Martin, that there's a lot of forms that we fill out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those aren't always web-based forms. They're paper documents that you fill out each year for your kid, or not necessarily even at registration time, but as field trips come up and things like that, you may have consent forms or permission slips to sign. So little Johnny doesn't always make it home with those in his backpack. Right. And it's nice to be able to go to the web and be able to get to those. Or if you're the teacher answering the frantic call, you know, I really want him to go on this trip, what can I do? Then you can point them to the ability to download the files.
Yep. Registration forms, computer usage agreements, cell phone agreements, medicine consent forms, all those kinds of things can obviously be up there. And then there's a whole set of documents, Sally, that are maybe documents that you don't want, you know, open to the general public, but maybe are secured by a login and a password. I'm thinking of maybe church council meeting minutes. There could be internal documentation, process, procedures, manual of operations, that kind of thing. Internal documents, job descriptions, planning documents, org charts, those kinds of things are all things that could be online, but maybe you want to attach, you know, put them in a section that you can secure. And those of you that are Final Web users, they don't, many of you are, they've got a fairly easy way to secure a document with a username and password. In most content management systems, you can do that in some way, shape, or form.
Absolutely. So, yeah, kind of a lengthy list, actually, when you start looking at the different kind of documents it takes to run a church and school. And having those online can be a very big convenience for you as you manage them, and also for you as you are users of those documents. Mm-hmm. So, good idea for your website.
Yep. So you've got all these documents, and some churches or schools may have many, many documents over time. They tend to accumulate and add up. So organization of those documents is probably just as important as the documents themselves, because if people can't find them, obviously they don't really need to be online. So really need to think through all the available options for organizing those documents. Some website softwares allow a folder structure, which we're probably all familiar with. But I think in general, Sally, you want to try and avoid folders. At least that's what we try and teach our users here at the Synod office, and try to use some of the better built-in tools that content management systems use today, and that's kind of a tagging system. So it allows you to assign multiple tags to a piece of content, and then you can filter and sort in multiple ways rather than just the one way that a folder demands you organize your content.
Yeah, I'm thinking about blogs and things, and it makes perfect sense to do the same thing with documents. But that's been very powerful asset to us, even with the Wells Tech blog, as we have built out over the years that we've done this, that we can tag in different ways, and I can search and find content in different ways. So it makes great sense, and is a great recommendation as you build your document libraries to add tags to your documents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't skimp on that, because that can be, I think, to some feels like an extra step or two. Why should I tag these? You just need to get it up there and available. But, you know, think as the user might think, because they're going to be searching for these documents in multiple ways, and they may not think the way you think. So just make sure that you're trying to take that into account. And then maybe another tip is to do a regular review of your documents. Stale and out-of-date documents really only clutter up the site and ultimately frustrate the user. So you want to make sure that what you have out there is useful information, and at least an annual review, if not more often, will keep the visitor happy and will, I think, make your organizational efforts a lot more efficient.
Very good. I think I have some work to do on our website, Martin. That's a tall order to actually go back and manage it.
It's too easy just to leave it there. But, as a webmaster, it's important to kind of keep the site clean, just like you'd clean up stale web pages, stale documents the same way.
Very good. We are going to have all of these recommendations tied up nicely for you in an ebook. If you have been following along, you can download it as we write it. It's what you'd call hot off the press. So check out the links in the show notes and look for this newest chapter in our summer ebook series. It's called Church and School Website Content.
Very good. Sally, should we move on to our picks or tips of the week?
I think that's a great idea, and I'm going to lead off talking about some Google search tips. And, I think this is kind of timely with back to school time and everything. I know one thing that I, as a teacher, want to teach my students is how to do good searching. And there were some tips in this article from Make Use Of, 8 Google search tips to keep handy at all times that I just was not aware of. Google can do all kinds of creative things. So just running down the list, there is a clock feature built in, so you can actually type time and then the city or our location.
Oh, cool. Find out what the time is. I could have used that last week.
Yeah.
What time is it in the States?
Coordinated those times a little bit. You can also type sunrise and sunset with a location and get that information as well.
Good for those photographers, yeah.
You can type in any stock symbol and the stock information will come up, graphs and pricing information on any stock. You can also type the word population in a location and learn some demographic information. Even unemployment rate in a location mm-hmm. will return results in Google. You can type the word translate and give it a language. So if you want to translate a phrase and then put what language you want to translate it into, it will respond with that phrase or word in that particular language.
Mm-hmm. So sometimes they even come up with a little pronunciation icon where you can play it and hear somebody speak it. So
that helps a lot, doesn't it? This one I was really excited about. You can use set timer 2 and set timer 4. So if you want to set a timer to 5 minutes from now, you can say set timer to 5 minutes and it'll count down and it'll buzz on your computer when 5 minutes is up, as long as you leave that window open, tab open. The alternative would be set timer 4 and give it a specific time. And it will ring on your computer when that time arrives.
All you teachers can use that for your little breakout sessions or whatever. Yeah. Or tests. Yeah. Cool.
Getting on down the list, you can check the weather in particular locations by typing weather and the name of the location. And you can do specific domain level searching by typing related and the domain name or site and the domain name to get search results that are limited to particular domains. So lots of options there for Google search, and some of them I thought were pretty fun and useful. So that is my pick of the week.
Very cool. Just kind of a sidecar pick. You can speak to Google now, too. This happened recently where you go to the Google homepage, and there's a little search by voice icon that you can click on and talk to your Google. So
very good. Nice for tablet users. Don't have to do all that typing on the screen kind of thing.
Right. All right, Sally, my pick is a hardware pick and of most interest probably to schools, but also churches too. It's a unified Wi-Fi management system called UNIFI, UNIFI, and it's the website is UNT from Ubiquiti Networks. UBNT.com, and they've got a bunch of products there. The one that I'm picking this week is called UNIFI, and I'm very familiar with this because this is what I took over with me to Hong Kong and helped install at Asia Lutheran Seminary. They look like these little flying saucers. You can mount them on the wall or the ceiling, and then you install software on the same network that you plug these routers into, and you can manage the entire Wi-Fi system. They're fairly inexpensive. For a three-pack, I think it runs about $200 for a pack of three. Their range is excellent. They have a standard range and an extended range. I would say in most settings, if you have a typical classroom size, you can get away with probably one of these routers for every two or three classrooms, depending on, you know, wall construction and those kinds of things. So you can think about your campus and figure out, you know, what would make sense here. The user interface is very easy to use. You can see what kind of range they would have based on a floor plan. So you can put a two-scale drawing into the system and then plop down the router where it sits in that floor plan and get a little map that shows the range. You can have a user or a faculty or a staff and a student network, and those can be separated. So the students network can, or guest network can be one where they log in and then they, you've seen these where you log in and then you have to open up a web page like in a hotel or whatever and type in a password. So you can do that, or you can have the standard, you know, Wi-Fi setup like you might have at home where you have an ID or a password that you need to enter right when you log into the system. Very stable. One of the neat things about this system is that since you're using all the same access points, you can move from area to area without having to join a new access point. So it moves you from area to area invisibly. So it's really a cool setup in that regard. And the user interface, or the interface to manage the network, is very straightforward and very, very user friendly. So this is a very cost effective system. You can pay a lot more for something like this and not get much more for features. So I think by and large, this is probably the system I would almost always recommend for any of our churches or schools looking to put in Wi-Fi. It's the one that we have now at Peace. It's the one we use here in the Synod Administration Building. And also, like I mentioned, I just put in a system at Asia Lutheran Seminary, one unit per floor. So I think this is probably the way to go right now as far as if you're looking to put in a Wi-Fi system.
I am feeling kind of envious and wanting one for my house. What do you think? Would it work at my house too?
It would work in your house, yes.
A little bit of overkill. I know, yeah. There was someone from Aerohive Networks at the Google Summit, which they have a similar product. And and I asked him that question, and he looked at me really strange, like, lady, you don't get it. This is bigger than that. So we like our Wi-Fi, don't we?
It is, yeah. And if it's not working, then that's a problem. So this is a very reliable system and very easy to set up. I would say you don't need to know a lot about networks. It's easy to install the software and get the thing running. So
excellent.
Cool. Sally, we want to probably put a little plug in for our conference coming up in September, next month now.
That's right. It's only 24 days till Wells Tech Camp, hosted on the campus of Martin Luther College, September 14th. That's a Saturday, and we're going to be meeting together all day doing the unconference thing, Martin. This is a new experience for me, but we don't have anybody lined up to speak. We're just going to rely on the people that show up to share and discuss, and I think we're going to come away really pleased with the outcome. I'm very excited about it.
We got some giveaways, too.
We do. We're giving away a 16-gig iPad and a Mimio Teach Bar, which is an interactive whiteboard solution that doesn't require you to buy a new whiteboard. You can use your very same whiteboard. And our friend Jason Schmidt is putting together a scavenger hunt game. I'm interested in using the app Scavenger, scvngr.com. So if you're going to be there, maybe you want to download this app and check it out. I think we're going to have some fun with that as well.
How do people get involved?
I'm sorry?
Go ahead.
I was going to say one more fun event we have planned is a tour of the beautiful Chapel of the Christ at MLC. So if you haven't been on campus before, you don't want to miss taking a walk through the chapel. It's just really special. So yes. All kinds of fun things planned for the day.
And how do people sign up, Sally?
Oh, that's important, isn't it? How about they go to wellstechcamp.wikispaces.com, and there's a link to register right there on our Wells Tech Camp page.
No cost, just bring yourself. You just need to get over there and you know, a night's lodging if you're not within a day's or a quick travel over. So starting at about 9, what did we say, 9, 9:30, 10,
well,
something
breakfast
like that.
Breakfast starts at 8:30. We're going to have continental breakfast, and the activities get underway about 9:15, Martin. We'll break into groups by 10 a.m. and be going at it. So should be fun.
Yeah. And if you want to come the night before, we're going to go out to dinner at the Kaiserhof.
New Ulm's famous Kaiserhof.
I forgot that part. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Should be fun.
All right. Thanks, Sally. Hope to see everybody there. Community feedback.
Yep, time for me to look at a different part of my mind map, because we do have some community feedback, starting with our Wells Tech listserv. And just to kind of bring people up to speed on the listserv, it's a place where people can ask questions and find answers. And I was really encouraged by the question that got asked by, and I'm having trouble bringing it up, Martin, maybe you can be ready to read the question.
Norbert Langbecker.
Right.
He's from Mount Calvary and Flagstaff.
Mm-hmm. And the reason I was encouraged is because his question related to our summer ebook series. He's reading along apparently, and we have it available in a EPUB format, which will work on iPads and things. Also in a Mobi format. So we're learning about all these different ebook formats. Mobi is the Kindle format. And Norbert's question related to being able to use that Mobi format on his PC through, I think it's called WhisperNet.
Yep, WhisperSync. WhisperSync. Yeah.
And he was asking if anyone had done that successfully, if he could get it into his account the way that you would a purchased book on your Amazon account. And then later he circled back with an answer. He found his own answer. Do you see that there, Martin?
Yeah, I've done some further research, and it appears using WhisperSync between mobile apps and Amazon desktop Kindle for PC is not possible for personal books. It only works when the book is purchased through Amazon. So.
Yeah. But we do have a PDF version out there too. So, I mean, there's versions.
Yep, you can get it on there. Absolutely. Yep.
So he just wanted it all in one tidy package, and I would too, but apparently that's not the way Amazon works, at least not at this point.
Right. Our hands are tied.
Question. Yep. Next up was a question from Rachel Arnold. She's at St. Matthew in Stoddard, Wisconsin. And Rachel wrote to us because she's been using a Facebook feature, I would call it, something that's built into Facebook called Questions. And they were using it on their church Facebook page to kind of generate some conversation on their page. Maybe they would put out a question like, what's your favorite hymn? And people could vote on their favorite hymns or submit their favorite hymns. And you guys have seen this. It kind of graphs the answers as people respond on Facebook. Well, apparently Facebook has stopped supporting and offering that feature. It's only available in groups, which is smaller than pages.
Mm-hmm.
And so Rachel was looking for an alternative to that. And I did find a couple of different articles on the topic. Let me just share my screen again. One that just talked about their, you know, putting that questions feature to bed and focusing on other things. But then I found this article from jeffbullis.com, and he wrote about 4 Facebook poll tools for your social media strategy. So he goes through and kind of reviews 4 different apps, basically, that you can make use of and do the same kind of thing with. The first one is just called Poll. Then there's Polls for Facebook, and I looked at both of these, and they seemed very robust and capable of doing the kind of things Rachel was asking about. There are 2 others, Poll Daddy and This last one is Cuply, and I didn't look as closely at those because they wanted me to install them just to get a feel for them, and the others had kind of splash pages that I could read about. So I didn't go through the process of actually installing any of these, but I think if you reference this blog post, it'll give you some good leads. And Rachel, if you were able to install any and make use of them, we'd love to hear your feedback on that as well.
Great.
Then my friend Tom Rosenau kicked in. Thank you, Tom, from Pigeon, Michigan. He's principal at St. John's there. And he really sent us some great links through Google Plus this week, Martin.
Yep.
Starting with a new offering from Getty Museum. They've tagged over 4,600 pieces of art as open source, basically freely available.
Free to download. Yeah, that's awesome. Mm-hmm.
So check it out. Check out this article and follow the link to get to the Getty Museum's open content. He also tagged an article about three free tools for sharing your faith. And this is from our friends at Logos, who do all kinds of Bible software. And this is a blog article from them recently. And they have Bible text animation videos. So they actually have a YouTube channel where they've put together some videos that they're sharing. They have a verse of the day. This is interesting. You can kind of build your layout and make a cover photo. Maybe you'd use it on Facebook or something with a verse of the day.
That's cool. Yeah.
And then finally, they have a way to stream Bible art to your computer, TV, or digital photo frames. So they're just really making use of some of this creative, artistic displays of God's word. So check out that article if you're interested. Tom also shared a link to Teachers on Pinterest. Thank you, Tom. I'm glad you're a Pinterest fan. This is a really cool page because this is actually curated by Pinterest. It's not someone's particular page of boards about teaching, but it's curated by Pinterest and very high quality. And it's organized by grade level. So if you are a second grade teacher, you may just want to follow this one board that Pinterest has made available, or if you're an art teacher or a science teacher. I think they've done an excellent job with the organization of this, and there's pretty much something for all kinds of teachers here, even a page dedicated to homeschooling, education blogs, supplies, all kinds of things. So check out Teachers on Pinterest. It's at pinterest.com/teachers. And then lastly from Tom, five cool things you didn't know that Chrome OS could do. So this is specifically for you guys who are launching Chromebooks in your schools in particular. Using Chrome OS, you can change the launcher position, you can get an immersive full screen mode, or always maximized mode. You can narrow search results to only show apps, and you can do some creative things with the trackpad,
yeah,
and add some different gestures and things to your trackpad. So all these different options are kind of buried down in the settings of your Chromebook and maybe worth investigating. Finally, over on Digo, I tagged a SlideShare, and just recently I started getting some really great emails from SlideShare. That's a place where people can upload their PowerPoint presentations or other formatted presentations like Keynote and share them with the world. So if you're doing a presentation, you could put your presentation there and people could look at it after your presentation is done or whatever. And they put together, I'm not sure if it comes out every week or how often, but kind of some of the top, the biggest hits on SlideShare. And this one was in one of their emails recently. It's a slide stack where Gar Reynolds, our friend from Presentation Zen, the book, and Nancy Duarte, who's another presentation guru, got together in July and kind of just had a sit down and visit and explain some things about presentations. And, you know, they kind of started with how they met, and it has different quotes from each of them. And the fact that they aren't really competitors, they just complement each other well, and they're in the different books that they have out about presentations and things. So if you're into presentations and want to have kind of a follow-up of our discussion of presentations, then it's worth the 5 or 10 minutes it takes to read through. It's a short slide stack, only 26 slides, but some really great quotes that people have kind of pulled out of their presentation.
You can listen to it on iTunes as well.
Yeah, it sounds like from Nancy Duarte. So, cool. Yeah, check it out and let us know if you learn anything new.
Very good. I think I'm going to add that to my Dynamic Classroom Presentations course material. That's good stuff. And nicely designed slides to boot.
So, of course.
If you'd like to contribute your own feedback to share with our audience, you can do that very easily by going to wellstech.wells.net and just leave a comment there. Or across the top right, you can see all kinds of available options for you to contribute in different ways, including email, wellstech@wells.net. There's a voicemail link on the right side where you can leave an online voicemail. Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, Digo, Google+, the Wells Tech listserv, all at your disposal. And we'd love to hear from you if you have ideas for future shows, comments on things we've already talked about, questions, things to share. Doesn't matter. We'd love to hear from you. So please consider that. Sally, what are we? Go ahead.
We're going to do a show next week, Martin.
That's what I was going to ask.
About our ebook again. But we're kind of moving away from the embeddable or format that you would, embeddable content or content that you would put on your website into a new area where we're just going to talk more focused on menu systems and kind of what to put and how to organize your website. And we'll start next week by just talking about a basic website. So perhaps you're just getting started or you just want the core information out there to establish yourself on the web. And that's what we're going to focus on next week. Maybe have some examples of different menu structures that you could make use of, sites that do it well, that kind of thing. So next week, it's the basics. And I know there's a lot of listeners. I met a lot of them at Synod Convention who are just getting started and need some direction on how to set up the menus and things like that so that their visitors have a good experience when they arrive on their sites.
Sure. Sally, I wanted to circle back real quick because, you know, as you mentioned, embeddables. I think one of the things that we probably neglected to talk about a little bit when we talked about documents is a way to embed documents on a web page, because that's exactly what we do on our site using a tool like Scribd. Mm-hmm. And we want to make sure that our listeners are also aware of that, since that did fall into that category. So it is absolutely possible to not just have links to documents, but also to share the content of those documents or PowerPoints, like you mentioned, with the tool that Gar and Nancy used to get their thing on the web. And you have things like where you can narrate.
My Brain Shark,
right. Mm-hmm. That's the one where you can do that as well. So lots of different options to get your documents online.
Very good.
Let's close the show with the music of Revelation, their song, You Are the God. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week. God.